Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Coach's Corner. On this show, I interview life coaches, business coaches, and other coaches to discuss all aspects of coaching and business. We'll also take your questions, and you might have the opportunity for live coaching right on our show. I'm Coach Andrew Poritz with Ingenuity Coaching. I help people transitioning from corporate America to entrepreneurship. My mission is to inspire and challenge you to dream big dreams, and with my coaching, help you to manifest those dreams into reality. If you're listening live and you want to call in with a question, the phone number is 646-929-2893. You can also go to www.blogtalkradio.com/coachandrew and join our chat room. You can also post questions there and talk amongst yourselves. Tonight, I have an unusual guest. The past 14 shows, I've been speaking to other coaches, and now I'm going to speak with someone who writes about the world of coaching. Mark Gioiella is known as the Coach Reporter, the community-supported journalist at the nonprofit Coaching Commons, covering the field of coaching worldwide. An Emmy Award-winning broadcast journalist, Mark's worked at television stations from Grand Junction, Colorado to New York City, and covered stories around the world. He's also written for the New York Post and got his biggest exposure as a news anchor, not on a big story, but in a cameo on Fox's 24 when Mark appeared as a grim Fox News Channel anchor reciting the death toll after a nuclear blast in California. Since leaving Daily Television News, Mark has blogged about the business at Local Newser, coached journalists and others on media skills, and with his wife, Tiffany, begun a wine and travel website, Vinatrek. In New York, Mark can be seen weekly on Tony Senecal's WPIX show, Tony On New York, where Mark's investigated a troll museum and learned how to eat fire at a Coney Island freak show. Mark and Tiffany live in Brooklyn with three dogs, a cat, and a strong desire for more space. Mark, are you with us?
Andrew, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. So I don't know if you know about this, but I recently had a little surgery, so my voice is very cracky still, and hopefully I won't crack too badly today.
No, no cracking, but if you need, I do know how to show you how to eat fire, and that tends to fix things.
Oh, that sounds great. I'm looking forward to learning how to eat fire.
Yeah, I was hoping that there was a trick to it, but at Coney Island, I found out it really is. You just close your mouth around it, and it goes out.
Ah, okay. No terrible damage.
No. So I don't know. There could be a coaching lesson in there somewhere.
You could have that sponsored by Tabasco, perhaps.
Or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Perhaps a cold beer. I don't know.
I think a cold beer might really be in order. So I got to take a good look at the site you've been on recently. And I actually got to read one of your articles today, the Coaching Commons. I did not know about the Coaching Commons until... I'm going to talk about how you and I know each other, which is very interesting. Everybody likes to talk about social media these days, and I learned of you when you retweeted, I think you retweeted my show. I'm not certain. Yeah, okay, you retweeted my show, and I saw that in my tweet deck, and I go, oh, well, who is this fellow? Who looks like Superman? Of course, that's because you're using a picture of Clark Kent.
Right.
And the coach reporter. And I said, oh, let me see what this guy's about. I looked at your Twitter page, and that led me to the Coaching Commons, which is a very excellent online newspaper. And a lot of people who listen to this show may never have heard of this before. So why don't you tell me a little bit about it?
The Coaching Commons started about a year and a half ago, and it's a nonprofit effort. And I think the concept there is to have a place where coaches of all kinds, life coach, business coach, whatever kind of coaching you do, if you engage a client or someone else in a coaching relationship, you're invited to join the conversation there. And it's kind of a like you might expect to find in a common area where there's some very serious content involving research that's being done at, you know, universities like Harvard and other schools around the world about the effectiveness of coaching, and lighthearted stuff about coaching. You know, it's a whole range, and right now there's a very active discussion going on about a piece that I wrote about certification. You know, the major coaching federations all offer certifications and accreditations, and there's a debate about whether there was some research done that suggested that you know, it makes you professional if you have mm-hmm. this accreditation, and it's something that is good for the field of coaching as it becomes a profession. And when I reported the story, I asked coaches around the world. I said, you know, how often do people ask you about that when shopping for a coach? And I had people say, never, no one's ever asked me about that. And it's different than, say, going in and meeting with a surgeon, where everybody says, you know, okay, where did you go to school and are you board certified? Now, maybe most people don't know how to define what board certification is for a mm-hmm. surgeon, but they have an idea that that's something they should probably ask about, whereas, you know, certain certifications that coaches have, most people have not heard of them, and they haven't heard about the different agencies and federations like ICF that offer them. And this got a really big debate going, and some people say, you know, coaches don't need to be professional. They just need to provide their clients with a service. And others said, you know, if we're going to be a profession, we have to have standards and codes of ethics. And someone else came in and said, you know, maybe the way to do that is to become licensed by the government. And others said, that's a terrible idea. You know, it's an interesting place where, you know, you'll find coaches from all kinds of places in the world. And I've found that very interesting, a lot like Twitter, where, you know, you can really engage with people that are very different, but get discussions going. And I think that was what the original intent was just to have a place where the field of coaching could kind of come together, share ideas, in my case, provide some original reporting on the field that the folks who put the site didn't think was happening right now, and as another way of spurring the conversation.
Yeah, I really like what I have seen so far. Actually, that the article that you just spoke of is the one that I read. And I found that that's a great discussion regarding the certification, the licensing possibilities. I was thinking about the world of real estate, where if you want to call yourself a realtor, you have to have a registered trademark after it, and they will really stomp on you if you don't
right.
put that in the newspaper without a capital R
right.
in every
yeah.
other sentence.
Yeah, that one of the coaches I interviewed who for the piece, as you probably saw, you know, and he's a coach, a business coach in the UK, and he says, mm-hmm. you know, nobody would just, you know, call themselves an architect if they weren't an architect, you know. But all kinds of people use the word coach, and it's even, you know, if you just search on Twitter or engage in other forms of social media, you'll see people whose Twitter names are, you know, I'm the cholesterol coach, or, you know, I'm the, you know, right news for you coach. And there's, you know, it's an interesting conversation whether that helps or hurts coaching. I mean, you can't take back the fact that there are sports coaches, and that's a kind of a different thing. But some, of course, would argue it's not that different. And there are my dogs. They're waiting on. Well,
I thought maybe you were just, you know, barking up the wrong tree there for a second.
No, I'm sure that people feel that way.
Yeah, that's. I find that the people have asked me, you know, the very same question about where have you coached. Where have you studied? Do you have what's your background? I often get those questions, not generally though from people who are looking for coaches.
Mm-hmm.
I normally get them more from people when I tell them what I'm up to, and they say, a lot of people have not even heard of coaching as a profession or as a career, whatever term you want to use for it yet.
Right, but there are kind of different approaches, and I know that you if I'm not mistaken, you know, kind of describe yourself as a certified professional coach.
That's how I describe myself, and that's now I am not a certified coach by the ICF at this point. I am certified by the ICA coaching school that I went to, which is an ICF accredited school. So I'm in the process of going for the ICF certification.
Right.
And
I think that's where some of the conversation goes. With
exactly.
The, you know, it's hard for the client to understand what all of these different things mean. Of course, the other question is they have to know enough to ask. And, you know, that may go coach by coach. And then the flip side of the argument, of course, if you read through some of the comments on that, on the Coaching Commons page about that article was, you know, just because you're certified doesn't mean you're any good. And,
that,
you know,
is correct.
Just because you're a professional doesn't mean you're not going to be a horrible coach to work with, whereas just because you're not professional, not certified, not accredited, doesn't mean you couldn't completely change somebody's life for the better. But this is the kind of thing that at least it's a place to go to talk about it. And because it's a nonprofit, it's not really geared, no one's trying to sell you anything.
Sure.
The conversation is free. You can also register there, and then a lot of the content will, you'll get notices when things happen. Like there are, you know, discussions and you know, articles about research and stuff. A lot of good stuff that's valuable. And but I think I think most coaches of all kinds would probably find something there of interest, even just to network with other coaches, because that's what it's just all about. You know.
Well, I found very interesting the coaching of a Hall of Fame section, which has a number of different people, many of whom I'm quite familiar with in the world of coaching. Some of them are related to coaching, like Martin Seligman, and you have there. Oh, Stephen Covey, and it says coach question mark, leader question mark.
Well,
Brian Tracy, the one who's for me one of my big influences in this work, who is not listed here, is the man with the very large teeth that you see in the middle of the night.
Sure.
You know who I'm speaking of?
I'm thinking maybe is this Tony Robbins?
Perhaps? Absolutely, Tony Robbins. I would consider Tony Robbins to be a phenomenal coach. I have experienced him as a, as far as his personal power tapes, and I've gone to his workshops. And certainly, as somebody who is taking on coaching as, you know, changing people's lives, he is probably one of the most successful people in the world. He's also maybe controversial because of his methods of marketing.
Right, And that's interesting because one of the areas that I've, you know, when I started at the Coaching Commons as the community supported journalist, I did basically what I guess any good reporter would do, which is anybody got any story ideas, you know? Anytime I engage with a coach on Twitter or online anywhere else or on the phone, or I say, what are people talking about? And one of the issues that I think that coaches are interested in but maybe feel a little weird about is the idea of marketing. I mean, some people, obviously, some coaches clearly have no qualms about it, and they're excellent at it, and they're phenomenal, and they're everywhere. And you know who I'm, kind of the ones who are the most famous who I'm talking about.
Sure.
But there are a lot of coaches who have small practices who don't really know how to market themselves and don't really want to kind of I think maybe they're more attached to the work they do one-on-one and don't really know how to go about reaching out in that way. But it seems like that's a conversation that with the opportunities online to build business that coaches can learn a lot from other coaches. And when I see what people are tweeting on Twitter, a lot of the articles that coaches link to have to do with how to grow your business, you know. Public relations and marketing and, you know, should I sign up with this or has anybody tried that? You know, seems like there's a really big appetite for that kind of conversation.
Absolutely. I think it's something that any of us who are involved in the world of coaching and trying to become successful at making a living within it need to become masters of marketing and learn all the different possibilities there.
Right.
Now, something you just said, though, was interesting about growing your practice, and that goes back to what you said earlier regarding coaching as a profession, mm-hmm. which at the moment it's a nebulous area at the very least. At least one of those marketing fellow people, I'm not sure if it was a man or a woman, it might have been Milano Leshinsky, I'm not certain, said that don't even look in terms of it being a practice, like who am I having in my practice? Because if you look at it in terms of a practice, as if you were, say, a psychologist or a psychotherapist, it's a completely different world of how to approach creating a business. We're in coaching, we're really looking to be able to expand past the constant finding of one-on-one clients and how else can we make an impact and how else can we create a successful livelihood.
Right. That's interesting. That's an interesting point. And that's a story that I'm kind of playing with right now. And so that it's weird. Yeah, it's an interesting word. I mean, you want to respect the fact that you're doing kind of really personal work, but at the same time, you are a business owner. You know, and nobody would say that you're not.
Well, I've taken that on in how I describe myself, and I have stopped using that term. I like to now say that I'm building my coaching business, and I never refer to it as my coaching practice. And I think mm-hmm. as long as there's not in existence some sort of true professional licensed way of being around coaching, that I don't think I would.
Right. Yeah, I would be interested to know what other coaches, how they use that phrase. It's something that it does conjure a certain sort of a concept of what you're up to, and that's interesting.
Well, I noticed that some people are very emotional about the entire subject when they start to bring up, well, you know, what's your background? What is your qualifications? Do you have a degree in psychology? As if that were even relevant to the conversation, and it's only relevant because now I need to re-educate somebody or educate somebody about what coaching is.
Right.
Because in their minds, they're looking at this as some sort of therapy, if that's how they're hearing it.
Right. Which then opens when you talk about regulation, then you get into a different area. If you start doing therapy, then you're not really.
If I'm doing therapy, please call a policeman and get me locked up, because that's definitely not my business. I have no training or business being in that. And yet, I can understand how they see that there's a lot of relationship of therapy and coaching, because we do use some of the same skills of asking questions and listening.
Yeah, and it's interesting that one of the people who's recently come on Coaching Commons to join in the conversation on that particular area is a therapist who in New Jersey who said she's had a lot of coaches coming to her to talk about, you know, doing that as a business. And as she said, you know, there is a real connection that could work for therapists and coaches, because, you know, it's like you might need to refer somebody, you know, to a therapist when you get into an area that's clearly if we really go down this particular road, we're going to be doing therapy, and it might be time for you to see somebody else for that, you know. And I imagine that a lot of business coaches are having these kinds of questions when you are dealing with clients who may be out of work and have never been out of work in their entire lives. And there's probably a lot of stuff there that's probably more therapy than career coaching. But it's an interesting area.
I've actually had, Mark, several clients. I would say maybe even the majority of clients that I've ever worked with have concomitantly had a therapist.
And does that work well? I mean, does that synthesize in a way that makes both of those relationships better?
I found that it actually was very helpful, and I was in a position to say, you know, here is something that I think I'd like to. My request is that you bring this to your therapist and get some more feedback there, because either because it wasn't my area, or because I also would want to not step on them.
Right.
And so I'd sometimes have them run things past, but I found that it worked actually pretty well.
Right. It does seem like that would be, you know, and then that also can, you know, as far as the coaching relationship, it's good when you can kind of get to a place and say, here's something that you can work on in this other place that'll help us when you come back. And then there may also be an angle to it, you know, business-wise, where, you know, you have people who can refer people to and maybe back the other way as well.
Absolutely. So, Mark, why don't you tell me a little bit about how you came to be here and what's some interesting things about you as a journalist?
Well, I've been a television reporter for a long time, and that was a lot of fun. Did that for many years, and had at the beginning of this year was in Miami, and my girlfriend at the time was living in New York, and we both wanted to not be doing a distance relationship anymore, and so she came down to Miami and told me that she didn't really like it, at least not to live. So it became a question of, okay, then if one of us is going to move, it looks like it's going to be me. So I quit that job and came back to New York, where I had worked previously and where we had met. And the television industry, you talk about, you know, I have a blog where I write about that, is going through massive change, where there just aren't jobs. And TV stations all across the country are laying people off in huge numbers, and the economics of it have changed dramatically. And, you know, at the time, my boss said, why on earth would you walk away from a good job? And I said, because I want to have a life. You know, I want to be married and have a family. And that, at this point, to me, is more important than the job. He said, well, I'm not going to let you do that right away. You have to think about it. Ultimately, obviously, he did, and I left, and I came up here, and we got engaged and got married 5 months ago. But it's kind of...
Well, let me be the last to say congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I was having an interesting conversation just about this kind of issue, where a lot of people at the time said, you know, what, are you crazy? But in reporting on coaching, I've engaged with a lot of people who have said there are a lot of people who are having that same kind of conversation with their coaches and with themselves about, you know, what's really important to me right now. You know, if I can't count on my job and I have to think about maybe what a new job might be, people are making it into or are having kind of these larger conversations with their coaches about, you know, okay, not just what do I need to do next, but what do I need to do that will really truly make me happy? You know, what will be kind of for the as Coach Ella Allison has written a book called Renewal Coaching, you know, and she talks about it, you know, like kind of the greater good. And for some reason, I think that while this economic situation we're in right now has got a lot of people suffering and feeling kind of pain and fear like they haven't before, there's something about that where it can kind of get you to open up to maybe things you are too afraid to even experiment with. So there could be, you know, I don't know if you've encountered this with any of your clients, but, you know, there could be something really great about, you know, okay, necessity requires that you look and you might be surprised at what you find. And for me, that's kind of what happened. I found my way into a totally different kind of world that's got a lot of new creative things and challenges, and I'm very excited about and enjoying it a lot.
Well, I would agree that the times like these are often the best times for people who are going to create something entirely new, and that they might not have, but maybe certainly would not have had the circumstance not pushed them against the corner where they said, well, what I need to do something different.
Right.
And then created the new business, a new model of anything, something entirely different. So many things I think great will ultimately come out of this these quote-unquote hard times.
Right. I think I was just reading something. That what you said really reminded me of that, you know, it's an entrepreneurial time. It's a time when, you know, it's the way things have been, continuing that isn't the way out. It's you have to try something new. You have to really create something that will kind of bring something different in, and that's exciting. And a lot of people have, you know, asked me, you know, what do you tell journalists with all these newspapers going out of business and, you know, jobs being lost and so much change? Do you tell students just to figure something else out? I said, no, I mean, there's always going to be a need for people to do journalism. And it's just a matter of, you know, if you're invested in the way we've always done it, then, yeah, it's going to be really hard. And that might not be a good way to go. But, you know, people in journalism school right now or in college right now, they're on board with Facebook. They live that way. They text already. They don't need to kind of be educated like people in newsrooms today about, you know, okay, what do you mean you need me to shoot my own video on my phone and, you know, and then send a hyperlink on Twitter? You know, they're already, that's the how they communicate already. They'll be fine. They'll find a way to figure out the new way that we do the news in the future. A lot of folks who have been around for a while, it's like, I just want to keep doing it the way we've always done it. I don't want to have to learn a new way.
So where do you see things going?
Well, online, and that's why it's interesting, you know, having the job that I have at the Coaching Commons, because it's an experiment. It's a journalistic experiment, and the way it came to be was, you know, the Coaching Commons is a nonprofit, and it's the philanthropist that supports it is a woman named Ruth Ann Harnish, who people come to with good ideas and bad ideas, and she kind of decides, you know, which ones she thinks are the good ideas and which ones are worthy of trying. And this was one she thought was worth trying. There's a professor at Kennesaw State College down in Georgia who has been experimenting with models for how to get journalists in places where there aren't journalists or where suddenly there's no money to pay a journalist. And he thought that if you could bring someone to a group of people that weren't currently being served, whether that's maybe a small town where the newspaper went out of business, or a like-minded group of people, like people who are interested in coaching, who are spread out all over the world.
Mm.
But you bring them together to kind of have their own journalist. And that may be a model where people kind of pay the town reporter, or in this case, you know, at some point pay the coaching reporter. So it'd be interesting to see how it works. I mean, there's a lot of people trying, as you said, in this kind of entrepreneurial time, because they have to find a new way of doing things, because just doing it the old way, companies are going out of business trying to make that still work. It'll be interesting to see what happens. But you know, there's a lot of new ways of doing things on you know, online and in various, you know. We do video at the Coaching Commons, and we do audio, and you know, have kind of, it's journalism that kind of keeps growing. Like you write an article, and then people talk about it, and then there's more to it, and it kind of it's not a printed newspaper that's the finished product. It's kind of ongoing, and it's alive, and that's interesting. And you have because when you do it that way, you have a chance to kind of keep the conversation alive and growing over time. It's its own kind of thing, if that makes sense. And,
well, it leads me into a whole other, you know, thought around, you know, you're talking about the printed newspaper, and I've noticed the consistent trend in all publications that I receive and read, things like whether it's the newspaper, Time, almost every magazine, are getting thinner and thinner and thinner, to the point that they're looking like little brochures compared to what they used to look like. And I'm wondering about the whole future of printed journalism. And I also wonder what happens when there's a power shortage and we're out of batteries.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, I remember I don't really the last company I worked for in television was a television station owned by the Washington Post Company, and I haven't picked up a copy of Newsweek. I think I might have bought the after the presidential election. They put out a special issue once every mm-hmm. 4 years. They have a team that just covers the campaigns, and then I bought that. But that was the first time I had, I looked at another copy recently, and as you said, it was really thin, like almost like it didn't even seem like a real magazine. And then you flip through it, and you realize, well, there's no ads in here. That's mm-hmm. the thing. And it doesn't. You don't have to really think too hard to see this is not sustainable the way it is.
No.
If nobody's buying ads, then how is that supposed to work? There's got to be some new way of bringing some money in, and newspapers are. The interesting thing is that newspapers are dying in the sense that the printing press is not going to be around forever, but the smart newspapers will be. They just won't necessarily be printed. They'll be online, and they'll be providing new kinds of storytelling. But there's so much argument and debate, just like in the world of coaching, about where do you go from here? Journalists are asking those same questions. Where do we go from here? Who's going to be paying us? How are people going to get it? Are they going to pay for it, or is this all got to be supported by advertising? And if it does, how's that supposed to work? Online, can you pay for a newspaper with Google ads?
That was actually my next question.
Yeah, they're like 2 cents a piece. There's no way.
Yeah.
So that's why people are really experimenting with things like what I'm doing, which is, okay, what other ways can we get journalists on the job? Does it have to be part funded by charity? The Huffington Post got, endowed to begin doing investigative journalism. It'd be interesting to see how that works. Because investigative journalism, that costs money. That's not cheap stuff. And international coverage. Having journalists in Afghanistan, that's CBS News has a one man band, a woman who shoots her own stuff with her own camera, and reports it by herself. In Afghanistan. I mean, these are the networks that used to have these huge crews with, multiple people. And that's just a sort of sign of the times. It's like, wow-wee, that's scary.
Quite a different world indeed.
yeah.
So,
and I've been trying to get to bring the issue of coaching to journalists, because I think that journalists could really benefit from coaching. And I don't know what your experience has been with kind of lines of work, who's more receptive to the coaching conversation and the mm-hmm. coaching relationship versus who's more resistant, like the cliche of Hollywood, with the cop after the horrible thing happens on the job, and they're like, you got to go see the police therapist. Like, forget it. I don't want to talk to that head shrinker. I think the journalists, I don't know that they're all, I don't know that they really have been among the top fields of looking into coaching as a way to kind of work through some stuff about when your entire field is changing right before your eyes, whether you want it to or not. This might be a good time to have somebody that you can really kind of hash things out with about your business and your job. And I think that one of the things I've tried to do is bring some of what I learned through my reporting at the Coaching Commons to the journalists who are still struggling, and a lot of them are out of work. And I've had a lot of coaches come to me and say, I'll offer my, help. I had a coach who specializes in, you know, how you, you know, does work with business people on, you know, formatting their resumes or their, you know, their work bios, and, you know, how do you take a career that's been based in, say, newspaper, and try and get a job online? And I think a lot of journalists are struggling with that because they say, well, my resume basically says I'm good for a dead industry. You know, how do I tell somebody who's a digital newsroom that I can still do it? And so this coach said, you know, I'll write some stuff that you can share on your blog with journalists about, you know, okay, here's some ideas on how you kind of get away from the actual job title and, you know, I worked at this newspaper doing this, and just get into the stuff that's still very relevant, you know. I know how to tell stories or whatever it is. And I think that the journalists can really benefit from that kind of thing, that kind of coaching, because there's a lot going on and there's a lot of smart people in the world of coaching who can offer, like, really nitty-gritty stuff like that, like, okay, how do I reformat my presentation for an interview? And then the bigger stuff, like, okay, I'm not really sure I even want to do this anymore. I've talked to a lot of people who are just, like, fed up, and they don't want to do it anymore. And so they have the question of, okay, what do I want to do? And there's a lot of coaches that are really good at that, that, you know, as you know, can ask the right questions. And but of course, journalists, we always think we always know the questions. We'll be doing the question asking.
that might be an interesting face-off.
Yeah, right. We don't like to be in front of the, I mean, we like to be in front of the camera, but we don't like to be questioned. So coaches are really good at asking tough questions, and maybe that's part of the resistance. And I don't even know if that's true. I'm just kind of going on my, I've never known a journalist who had a coach, as far as I know. And
yeah, I haven't experienced that yet either, and it might be a very interesting thing to see if that does occur. But I think it's all about when things change, you need to become a master of reinvention and looking, as you would say, outside of the box and what else can be different. So the probably the smart journalist who is in the situation of watching their things change and maybe walls falling away around them is going to look to that as a resource, if they know about it.
Right, and so that's kind of what I've been trying to do. You know, I try to spread the word that there is this field, as you were saying earlier, like there are people who are not aware of it, other than just the kind of the casual use of the term coach. And
yes,
it seems like it's a perfect time. I mean, I know that a lot of business people, I've talked to some coaches who work with, you know, just the absolute upper echelon of executives in the country, and who are dealing with people who have never ever known this kind of insecurity before. And there's a lot of really, really smart people doing what you do who can guide you through that process of getting to the next step without feeling kind of that it was some kind of defeat. That, you know, this can lead to something really interesting.
You know, one thing I wanted to ask you about in regard to some of the people who are out there in the world of coaching, do you have any stories about people that you have spoken to? And also, do you have a dream list, but anybody you'd really like to be able to sit down with?
You know, I don't know that I have a dream list, unless, you know, of people. I've been surprised by just the quality of the people who have come forward and who I've engaged with so far. I've found a lot of really, really smart people, and in interviewing them, I find that, as you probably do, when you interview coaches, and they're just like really interesting people to talk to, and they have such interesting takes on life, and and living and in trying to get the word out that I'm there, you know, to coaches as a, you know, person who can report on stories and, like, you know, if there's something out there that people think is worthy of coverage or needs to be covered, you know, I want to hear about it. But I'm on Twitter all the time, and I'm sending messages to people, and I'm telling people what I'm working on and engage, and then just like you and I engaged, where you know, I saw that you have a, you know, your show was coming up, and so I retweeted it to let folks know. And coaches tend to be really generous in that way, you know, just like with a good quote or
sure,
a really intriguing question, or an article that, you know, they put out. And I find that a lot, you know, especially in the world I come from, journalists are not exactly that generous. You know, we like to hold everything pretty close in. Coaches are, there's like one person I'm waiting to talk to, because I'm really finding that as I just get rolling, that the people I'm talking to are just fascinating. And and thanks to technology, I'm talking to people all over the world. I've had a few interviews recently. I'm working on a story about coaching in China, and I've been on the phone first thing in the morning talking to, no, sorry, I've been on the phone in the evening talking to somebody who's having breakfast in Hong Kong, you know, and that's just that, you know, that's really fun, and I'm enjoying it. And but yeah, hey, I'm always looking for suggestions. If somebody you think I should interview, let me know.
Oh, I'm sure I can think of a few people, you know, that'll come to me. There's so many great books out there that have been very influential, and I would imagine speaking to some of the authors of those books might be very interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting. I asked on Twitter a couple weeks ago, you know, what books would you recommend over the summer to other coaches? And we put together kind of a top 10 list, not intended to be the authoritative top 10 best books ever written on coaching, but rather, if I say to you, what book would you recommend to another coach right now, what would you say? And it was like a really interesting group. We got like a couple textbooks, like a student in the graduate coaching program at Georgetown recommended a book that, you know, was one of the required readings, you know. We got some of the ones you'd expect, obviously. And then we got a couple, like, some fiction books. And a book on history, a world history, I'm trying to remember which book this was. It's slipping my mind right now. The coach that recommended it said, you know, the dynamic between these characters just reminds me so much of the coaching relationship that I think coaches could really, you know, read this with that in mind and get a lot out of it. It's kind of interesting. And then, of course, after I posted the video, everybody started bringing their reading lists up. And that's something that if people haven't been on the site, they can look for and just get some really interesting takes on, you know, what's worth a good read over the summertime.
Oh, I'm very interested now in taking a look at that. But can you think of any off the top of your head?
Well, there was Eckhart Tolle was on the list.
I put him in Usual Suspects.
Yeah, I mean, some that you you would not be surprised by. I'm trying
right
to think of the ones that were the surprises. It'll come to me. Just give me a second and I'll remember. But naturally, whenever I'm pressed, I like.
Well, I'll give you a couple of mine while you're thinking. One is Good to Great. Did you ever read that book?
No.
That's it's a study of what created the difference between companies that were just good and became really great.
Huh.
And I would say for anybody in business, it's probably a must-read. Jim Collins was the author of that book. Another one, a fellow who was in the news today, Rick Pitino.
Mm-hmm.
Has a book called Success is a Choice.
That's good.
And I thought it was a terrific book. And another one, this is one of the books I give away to people, The Four Agreements.
Now, I've heard of that. What is that?
Four Agreements is, they call it ancient Toltec wisdom. And it's it's four really simple ways of being that if you were to master them, things become a lot different in your life. Something as simple as not having, actually now that the agreements themselves just went right out of my head, this is the same way that your titles
yes.
went out of yours.
I'm glad.
Yes.
Not glad, but I do feel better.
You know, it's like never make assumptions. It would be a really, really key agreement.
Right.
And it's when you start to get that everybody in the world, there goes my voice cracking. It's like it's my alfalfa moment. Everybody in the world has their story, and you're just in it. And if you get that, you know, everybody's stuff is their stuff,
mm-hmm.
and yours is. Yours is yours, and so never take anything personally.
Right.
But it's more than just saying that. It really requires, and it's not a heavy read at all. In fact, you could probably read this in a day or two. But it's so simple and brilliant, and requires, I think, a constant re-reading and re-application in order to really get it. Like a lot of things, some things you can't just read it and now there you are.
Right, right. No, and a lot of books like that that are thought-provoking, you can kind of go back to again and again and sort of, you know, for me, I'll read a book or refer to it again, and I go, this was in here the first time. I didn't pick this up at all. It's like the author rewrote it to you know, address my life now. The book, by the way, that I was trying to remember before, the historical book was Franklin and Winston. And it's a book by John Meekham, and it's about Franklin Roosevelt and Winston Churchill. And the coach that recommended it thought that kind of wartime relationship was worth study, which is kind of an offbeat pick for a coaching book. But she just said, trust me, it's that's worth checking out. There's also a book... more specific to kind of what's happening today with people with their careers and stuff, called Working Identity. And the author's name is Erminia Ibarra, I believe. And that was recommended by a San Francisco business coach who works with a lot of people who are kind of trying to figure out, okay, what's the next act in my career now?
Mm.
And said that was a good one to for coaches who are working with clients who are trying to kind of reevaluate things and decide what's important for them and you know, figure out their identity because I especially for people who have had those jobs where their job is their identity, you take that job away, then they're kind of like, who am I now? I'm kind of lost. And that was another one.
Hmm. Now, is that San Francisco coach? Is that somebody who had a column in the paper over there for a long time?
Not that I know of.
There was somebody I learned about not long ago, and of course the name is completely escaping me. Who was pretty well known in San Francisco, but the name would have been funny if it's the same one. Of course, now nobody knows who we're talking about. But that's okay.
No, I don't even know who I'm talking about.
Well, that makes us even.
And then just to make it, just to make sure that everything was above board, the top pick was the portable coach, and
okay,
that got, you know, more votes than any other. So figured.
I know that's been on the list of things for me to get to.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Yeah, so it was funny that there was somebody who tweeted it to me, and a lot of people sent me emails with their pick, and said, you know, here's why, and I think that, you know, the author's, you know, ideas about coaching are life changing, and this person just basically said, the portable coach, Thomas Leonard, it rocked my world. I'm like, all right, rock the world.
Rock my world. As always. Well, Thomas Leonard is considered the father of coaching.
A world
rocker.
Yeah.
I'll tell you another. Here's a surprise one for you. I would perhaps read one of the autobiographies of Theodore Roosevelt, in particular The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt, mainly because when a lot of what coaching is about is causing action. And Roosevelt was not only one of the most ridiculously accomplished human beings. You know, the more you read about him, the more you can't even believe some of the things that he managed to get done in his years and in his day. He was all action.
Right.
He was all action and well thought out. He was no slouch in intellect. And it's a very inspirational read to read about somebody who is just so committed towards creating things that happen like right now and in so many
right.
different areas of his life.
Right. I always find that books like that, I had somewhere in my life I made a switch, because when I used to read books like that, I would always kind of approach them when I was younger and I'd say, well, how did that happen? You know, how did that happen that this person who had this and this suddenly ended up there?
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere along the line, I realized that I could look at my own life and interpret it that way. And I didn't feel like it was a fluke. It was kind of like, no, I made choices every step along the way. And some of the choices I made were maybe a little bit riskier or bolder than others. But it wasn't just like, you know, a genie didn't show up and just give me three wishes and suddenly I was, you know, achieving something. And when I started to read biography after that, I started to see really the kind of the threads there that lead to some of these inspirational characters, you know, that you see just how much, you know, work went into it. And from that, you can find a lot of inspiration that, you know, as they say about the, you know, hitting the rock, like, you know, what, 1,000 times, and it's only that last time that it breaks, but it doesn't mean that that was the one time that did it. You know, it was the 999 times that it didn't break that were important, you know. And so I love reading stuff like that and recommending books like that to other people. I love it. I get a lot out of, you know, I've enjoyed reading recently a lot of books by some of the kind of Buddhist monks, you know, who have very modern takes on Western life, and it's just, I don't know how that works, but I get a lot out of it, and kind of that was one of the things that popped in my head when you would love to interview, is like, you know, like sometimes I interpret a coaching interview necessarily, it doesn't have to necessarily be a coach in the strictest term of the word, you know. Though obviously most of the people I interviewed are literally they're coaches, you know. But
right.
I think that, like you are suggesting, coaches can benefit from hearing from some people who get kind of what coaching is about, but from another perspective. Like I believe that, you know, there are a lot of super great sports coaches, you know, that, you know, while they're not doing business coaching, they certainly know how to motivate people. They certainly know how to, you know, to get at people, and I think that's really interesting stuff. You know, I mean, what's Google CEO Schmidt? He just, if you saw in Forbes recently, you know, he said everybody should have a coach, everyone. And you know, his coach is a former sports coach. You know, so
I'm gonna have to borrow that quote and make sure I put it in a prominent place. Like on my blog, so that people can benefit from that.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, I'll tell you. Like, I have an upcoming guest. I don't know when this is going to happen yet, but I met someone whose son is an Imagineer for Disney.
Imagineer.
An Imagineer. This is somebody who creates those really cool things you see when you go to Disney World. And this is somebody. What's that?
Yeah. I was going to say, that's quite a job title.
Yeah, that's a job title. And this is somebody who, as a kid, went there all the time and just fell in love with the whole idea of creating these things and went and wound up going to school for entertainment technology and got a dream job that he dreamed of since childhood. I mean, dreamed, almost created in a way. And so that's the kind of person that I'd love to talk to, because I love to inspire people to dream big and then live it.
Right.
So here's somebody who really did that. I don't know that he ever had any coach other than, but actually what I do understand, he had his mentor was the fellow who, the professor who was on Oprah, who he recorded his
the last lecture.
That was his actual mentor.
Wow.
So I'm very excited about having somebody like that on the show. And that's somebody who's, you know, not a coach, but who I would be very inspired to listen to that man's story.
Right. And if you look at the some of the quotes that coaches will share in tweets on Twitter, you know, there are, yes, a lot of them are from coaches, but a lot of them are from, you know, just people who have perspective and
mm-hmm.
who can kind of, you know, get that laser beam on the issue, whether it's just, you know, there's a coach that I know out in San Francisco who has just recently been just asking these questions in her Twitter feed, just really like, oh, that's an interesting question. you know, what have you done today that whatever, that makes a difference in something? You know, that's a bad example, but they've been really sharp questions. And
what their Twitter name is, so we might follow them. This person,
Ali Berlin, Ali Berlin, like the city.
Okay,
and she's a relationship and business coach, but has been asking a lot of interesting questions just about, you know, your approach to your relationships in your life. And every time I see them, I'm like, wow, that's an interesting question.
Well, now I know who the next person I'm going to follow on Twitter is.
Ali Berlin, yes, a good
Ali
one.
Berlin, absolutely. So we're almost out of time. We were down to our last 2 minutes. So is there anything you'd like to let anybody know about that they might want to find, or where to find you, where to find the site, et cetera?
The Coaching Commons is at coachingcommons.org, Coaching and Commons spelled COMMONS. And if you go to the page, you can find me. You look at the top, there's a little tab for Coach Reporter. And that's my Twitter name as well, Coach Reporter. And I'm always looking to engage on Twitter and talk about stuff that's going on out there. And email is mark at coachingcommons.org. That's anybody who wants to talk or suggest a story of any kind. I was working tonight on a story that will be up soon. Talking about Google, we got some Google trend information about where people in the world search certain phrases about coaching.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's just the weirdest stuff ever. Like, you know, this small town in the UK, and that's like career coach. It's the fourth, it's the city that is fourth most likely in the entire world to search for a career coach. And it's this little town in Surrey in the UK. I'm like, now why is that? Now, I have no idea, and I'm hoping that people will help me. I hope they'll watch the story and help explain it to me, because I don't know. But there are these little, you know, like, I don't remember the exact terms, but some of the search ones came back with some very straight, like Pleasanton, California, career coach. It's like number four in the world.
Wow. Mark, I'm going to thank you very, very much, because we're going to get cut off if we continue past the next 30 seconds. I
want
to thank you.
I don't want that.
Very much, Mark. Joella, the Coach Reporter with CoachingCommons.org. And thanks for being on the show. And thanks to everyone who was listening or will be listening in the future to the replay. And we'll see you next Thursday night. Good night.
See you.